Big news from Hollywood was the premiere of Max Factor's colossal makeup studio. Anita Louise and Mae Robeson were among the film stars of the day, congratulating the makeup maestro. A New York beauty parlor for men opened about the same time with Jimmy Durante as a patron.
Okay, I didn't know who Max Factor was. However, now I do. I still have no idea who the Hollywood stars are.
Okay, well, Jimmy Durante was a very successful comedian and actor way back when. If we'd let the clip keep on playing, he would have made a joke about his looks. So I don't think he had a problem with low self-esteem.
Hollywood, Max Factor. I'm guessing there's a cosmetics angle to this episode.
That's absolutely right, Sam. But are cosmetics designed to tap into people's anxiety about their appearance, or are they a healthy way to accentuate our best selves?
It's a fine line, or a fine eyeliner.
Sam, are you planning to become a comedian yourself? Because I think your material needs a bit of work.
Well, there goes my self-esteem. How do you feel about cosmetics then? Do you think it's empowering?
For me, yes. I think cosmetics, makeup, most of the time, yes, I think they are empowering. But I can understand how we can all be a bit weighed down by them as well. I guess it's all tied into social perceptions and pressures. But anyway, let's start focusing on the science. In this episode of Zwittering On, we're going to talk about the chemistry of cosmetics. Hello, I'm Mariam Rifode-Blees, and I'm the Head of Education at the Salters Company and Institute in London.
And I'm Samuel Dada, or Sam, and I'm a PhD student at the University of Cambridge in the Department of Chemistry.
We know chemists can do everything. And in this episode, we'll be joined by two guests, a scientist at the top of their game on the subject who knows a lot more about it than us, and a student also on the subject who wants to learn how to address these issues.
In every episode, we will do our best to introduce the main topic under discussion and then pass over to an expert and a student to have a conversation about the past, present and future of the science at the heart of it.
And as tempting as it might be for the two of us to just sit and nod along, we'll be joining in with the conversation as well.
We are going to be breaking things down for you so you can understand it. So at the risk of embarrassing ourselves, at the end of each episode, we are going to be quizzed by the experts on the key takeaway from the conversations in the expert test.
The expert test. Yes, we will, Sam. And even though I really hated exams at school, we will be keeping score every week and throughout the whole series to see who out of the two of us will be the winner of the expert test.
So going back to the opening clip, when was Max Factor first established and when did we start becoming obsessed with cosmetics?
The infomercial is actually from 1935, but cosmetics and the quest for beauty and eternal youth goes way, way back.
Yeah, the Egyptians were interested in it 4,000 odd years ago, weren't they? Or has Hollywood misled us with how the Egyptians are portrayed in films?
I don't think Hollywood has misled us on this occasion because it was the ancient Egyptians who first used makeup. It was a symbol of godliness and it was worn by men and women of all classes. The most widely used was kohl, a form of eyeshadow made from galena, an ore of lead or stibnite, which itself is an ore of antimony, a type of metal.
Antimony is a chemical element with the symbol Sb from the Latin word stibinum, found in nature mainly as a sulfide mineral stibnite. Is it toxic?
Yes, I think it is. Eyeshadow is, of course, still used today, although less toxic alternatives such as carbon are used to give the colour. The ancient Greeks and Romans, on the other hand, opted for a more natural look, using light colours on lips and cheeks. Although here too, they used toxic compounds such as mercury and lead-based dyes.
I think that the word toxic here has two meanings. The actual deadly compounds people willingly put on their faces and the need to do it just to live up to beauty standards.
I hear you, Sam. But self-care isn't just about society. A lot of people do it for themselves rather than society's expectations. Even the Egyptians applied what we now call cosmetics, often using aloe, myrrh and frankincense for a range of purposes, including as anti-aging creams. But moisturiser, it's a very loose term. And we know that humans have been applying oily mixtures to their skin for thousands of years. All I can say is thank God for cocoa and shea butters.
Kudos to the chemists out there who figure out safe and effective ways to make this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of which, there are two methods commonly used. Either oil in water or water in oil. Now, at first glance, these seem identical. So what's the difference? Well, the difference lies in what is called their dispersed phase. This can be like oil in water, where you just have tiny drops of oil dispersed in water, or vice versa.
I can already hear some of our listeners screaming, but oil and water don't mix.
That's correct, which is why we have to add an emulsifier, which is like soap. When you wash up, you need the soap to help bring the oil onto the pan into the water to be washed away.
And so to cap off what you're saying, Sam, choosing the right moisturiser is a real challenge in this day and age because of the vast range of different compositions.
Yeah, if you have ever looked at the label on the back of your moisturiser, you've probably realised that chemistry has a big part to play in the cosmetics industry. And for those wondering, polydimethyl siloxane, which I'll shorten to PDMS so I don't pass out, is a silicon elastomer with a wide variety of uses, from cosmetics to uses in industry. PDMS is optically clear and in general inert, non-toxic and non-flammable. Pentyl erythritol disterate serves as a formula, emulsifier and emollient. Basically, it helps prevent water loss and softens the skin, allowing one to maintain a healthy, hydrated look.
Healthy, hydrated look. That's the look I'm going for, Sam. Now, usage levels in cosmetics range from 1% to 5%. So there's obviously a lot of other ingredients too.
Yeah. Each cosmetic product will contain anywhere from 15 to 50 different ingredients, each serving their own purpose. You have to literally be a chemist to understand all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And not all of us are chemists. So for those who wear makeup, getting the right consistency and colour is vital if you want to feel your best. Carbon has already been mentioned with respect to eyeliner and mascara, given that jet black colour.
So what are some of the other things we commonly find in our cosmetics? And how is chemistry changing the industry?
Now, those sound like questions for our expert. So shall we move on to the conversation?
Okay. And as always, we'll finish the episode with two of us going head to head in
the expert test. It's absolutely fantastic to welcome our guest expert today, Laura Rudo, who specialises in green and organic cosmetics. Laura is also the founder of Evolve Organic Beauty.
Thank you for having me.
We are also joined by Natola Islam, who is currently an undergraduate studying chemistry at Queen Mary University of London.
Thank you for having me here.
Hi, Natola. It's good to have you in the studio. So each episode, we ease in our guests by asking the same two questions. If you were an element, what would you be and why? That's the first question. So, Natola.
I would say chlorine, because my favourite colour is green, but also it's very versatile. So I would like to be considered versatile as well, like chlorine.
Fantastic. And Laura. If you were an element, what would you be and why?
I would be magnesium because it's such an amazing mineral that we can use for our health.
I love that. And also, Natola, who is your favourite fictional scientist?
It's kind of controversial. I would say the villains from Disney movies. They're always brewing up something. So I think that's kind of funny. And they're always in memes. So, yeah.
And they're always using chemistry, but...
I guess.
But not for good. So we'll just overlook that.
Love that. And Laura?
I have to confess, I don't watch many movies and I couldn't think of anyone. So I would go for a female scientist who really changed history, someone like Marie Curie.
Amazing.
I think she's inspiring people still. So I think that's an excellent choice. So now the serious questions are out of the way. Let's get to it. Natola, what questions do you have for Laura?
So what motivated you to start Evolve Beauty?
So I was already working in cosmetics when I decided to start my own business. And I just had worked in the industry for about 3 or 4 years at that time. And I just realised I loved formulation and I loved making natural products. And the reason I had decided to join the cosmetics industry was actually because I was very interested in helping to set up an ethical business as well. So I really believed in the idea of business being a force for good and creating products where the actual product had goodness built into it. And that meant we could really focus on making the best product possible. And then we could focus on being a really successful business and know that we were then also having a good impact on the world and on people's health as well.
When you talked about organic and green chemistry and using it for products, when you talk to your friends, they always say organic and sustainable is the positives of it. It's kind of like the hero of the beauty, health and beauty world, whereas the synthetic world is more villainized. Why do you think this is the case?
I think that there's a natural tendency to understand natural compounds and what we can do with them. So if we understand that when we put things on our skin, to some extent we absorb them, it's important that our bodies can recognise those compounds. So it doesn't mean that every synthetic compound is bad, but if we're using natural compounds, we've evolved alongside nature for millions of years, it's more likely that our bodies will be able to understand those chemicals and absorb them. So for example, if you put natural oils on your skin, the friendly bacteria on your skin can actually digest them and turn them into useful compounds. If you put silicone on your skin, it doesn't do any harm to your skin. It just sits there as an inert layer. But it's really great if our bodies can assimilate some of the compounds and get really good things out of them.
And I also wanted to ask, what are some of the common ingredients used in moisturisers that you think are a bit harmful?
I'll answer your question in two parts. First, I'll talk about what goes into a moisturiser, and then I'll talk about what might be a natural option or a synthetic option for some of those things. So when you have a moisturiser, as we've already said, you would normally want to include some oil and some water. You'll be mixing those together. So most moisturisers contain quite a high percentage of water, normally about sort of 60 or 70%, depending on if we're going to go for a really thick moisturiser, there'll be less water, or if we're going for a really light hydrating moisturiser or a lotion, there'll be quite a high level of water. And then there'll be some oil. So that could be natural oil, or it could be an oil that's a little bit more chemically processed. And then, as we said, there's also something that's going to join those two things together to turn that into a cream. A little bit like when you make mayonnaise and you mix your egg with your oil. Your egg is actually doing that job. It's binding the oil and the water in the mayonnaise together. And that's how a moisturiser works. And so... those emulsifiers, which is what you use in a moisturiser to do that, can be something that comes from nature or it can be something synthetic. Now, whenever we have water in a formula, we also have to think about safety because there's always bacteria everywhere. It's on our skin, it's in the air. And so as soon as the cream is opened, it will be exposed to bacteria and fungus and yeast and mould. So we need to keep that formula stable. Otherwise, you would have to keep it in your fridge and just use it in a few days like you would do with food. So we need to put something in the formula called a preservative. Now, many preservatives are synthetic. There are very few truly natural ones that can protect the formula against both bacteria and against molds, although recently some new ones have come on the market, which we're now using. So even in our natural products, we'll sometimes use a small amount of synthetic preservative. But there are ones which are considered to be safer, which also get used in food products. And then there are ones which are potentially questionable. Now, anything that has a bad safety record is probably not allowed to be used, but there are some things where we might have question marks over whether the long-term use is safe. So an example of that in cosmetics could be something like parabens. They've been used for many, many years, but they've also been found in breast tissue. So some people don't want to use them because they worry that perhaps they may be linked with forms of cancer and things like that. If that was proven, they wouldn't be on the market, but because there's a question mark, they don't get used in some natural products. And there are other options that we use. So the natural preservative that we now use actually comes from sugarcane waste, which is upcycled into a preservative ingredient. So we're taking a waste material and then turning that into a useful product, which is great. So you've now got your emulsifier, you've got your preservative. The other thing we always use in a moisturiser will be a thickener to actually make the cream have a texture. So otherwise it would be really super runny. And then you can use different things again to thicken up your formula. It could be a seaweed type ingredient like a gel. And then you can also get plastic plasticizers and various sorts of ingredients that derive from petrochemicals to be used as thickeners as well in more synthetic products. And then, of course, you may also have something in there which is going to potentially change the appearance of the skin. So you'll be thinking about things like anti-aging. You know, are we going to put something in there that's an active that's going to potentially change the appearance of the skin? So those are the main things that go into a moisturiser. And those are some of the alternatives for some of those key things.
I'm sure you've heard of the new trends of going into the Eastern beauty and skincare compared to like maybe a few years ago, around 2015. Now people are more inclined towards moisturizer and makeup that gives you more of a dewy look. So there's more glitter and something that gives that shine to moisturizers, also tinted moisturizers. So there's this ethical issue about mica, or mica, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, which is not very ethical as it's a mineral that's mined usually by children because it's found in really like small spaces. So do you think there's any alternatives to that? Because most alternatives, which is glitter, it's microplastics, which pollutes the earth and our oceans.
Yes, there's lots of ethical issues that can be in supply chains, and cosmetics suffers from that alongside lots of other industries. So firstly, on the dewy look, there's different ways to achieve that. So one way is actually to use ingredients that help to lock moisture into the skin and then actually try and keep that moisture in the skin using an oily product, so something which has got oil or emollient in it. And you can actually achieve a dewy look without having to put any glitter or any pigment on the skin, just from the healthy skin looking really hydrated and glossy. So that's the way we normally talk about achieving a dewy look. But we do also use mica, and we have found an ethical source of mica. So although you're completely right that supply chain has lots of issues in it, we were very concerned about that. We were able to certify that the mica that we use comes from a supply chain that doesn't have any child labour in it. So I think one of the alternatives is to try and make sure that whenever you do use an ingredient that might have a problem in the supply chain, you're really checking and verifying that there aren't any issues with the ingredients that you're using. But you're right that other alternatives to mica, so other types of glitters, could also have plastic in them. And I've seen on the market recently, there are biodegradable glitters that have been launched for exactly this reason, because we don't want to have tiny amounts of plastic in the ocean. And there are lots of other things as well, which can end up going from products into the water systems to be aware of as well. So things like the ingredients that are in sunscreens can also be really bad for the water system. But the good news on the glitter, at least, is that there is a biodegradable option now on the market. And you have lots of other pigments as well you can use. So mica is one of lots of different minerals that you can use to do colour-type cosmetics.
Thank you.
Laura, you've just mentioned the word pigment. And for our listeners who aren't in chemistry or in the industry, could you just explain what pigment is?
Yeah, so the word pigment is any kind of colour substance. So you get the word used in paint as well. So it gives an ingredient or a compound its colour. So in our products, we have a tinted moisturiser and we use a few different minerals. We use zinc oxide, very finely ground, which makes a white pigment. And then we use different types of iron oxide, which give us a black and a red pigment, as well as another ingredient which comes from a yellow pigment. And we mix those together, lots of the white and tiny amounts of the black and the red and the yellow, and you can use that to make different skin tones. And we have our tinted moisturizer in four different skin tones so that it suits all different shades of skin.
Wonderful. Yeah, I just had a quick question. I love what you're doing in terms of, you know, looking at products which are obviously sustainably sourced, ethically sourced, and also good for the environment. Just out of curiosity, I wondered, do you have a favorite natural compound?
Yes, I do. When I was looking for ingredients that would help me solve skin problems, which is one of my missions, because I have problems with my skin when I was growing up and I really wanted to help other people who had problems, I was looking for the most effective natural ingredients that we could use. And my search took me to the ends of the earth. So we actually found some ingredients that are made by bacteria. And they're my favourite, I think, because they're a green biotech type ingredient. So, and there's a really fantastic and quite cool story attached to them. So this bacteria was discovered on the underside of a glacier in Antarctica. So nothing can live in that harsh environment. So there are no plants there. It's really only bacteria that can survive there. And to live in such a harsh environment, they have to evolve a survival strategy. So their survival strategy to stop them being crushed by the intense cold is to make a special compound called a glycoprotein. So this glycoprotein, which they produce when they're under stress, helps to strengthen their cellular walls. And when we put it on our skin, it strengthens our skin too. So it actually boosts collagen production by 124%.
Oh, wow.
And when it's used in anti-aging tests, it reduces wrinkle depth by 44%. And it's the most effective anti-aging ingredient I've ever found from nature. And it actually does a better job than many synthetics as well. So I really love that ingredient because I love the fact that we're really harnessing a survival strategy from another species. And I actually found in longevity research, so when you look at the work of researchers like David Sinclair, who look at how we can extend our lifespan, he actually talks about these compounds. And I found that that what I had observed with these ingredients actually has a name. It's called xenohormesis. And that means taking the survival strategy of another species and then harnessing it for ourselves. And he uses that for things like the research into red wine compounds like resveratrol, because that's the same kind of compound. It's something that the grape makes to protect itself. And then when we have it, it makes us stronger.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
When you were talking about finding the bacteria in a very harsh environment, it reminded me of in your website, in one of your, I think it was adaptology, you talked about plants having the adaptogens. Would you like to talk more about that? I'm quite interested in that.
Sure. So I have two brands. So my main brand is Evolve Organic Beauty, but the brand that I created when I was starting to work on these skin solutions, and really I started looking at these amazing plants and other bacteria that come from all these extreme places, is the second brand I created called Adaptology. And I called it Adaptology because it's all about us adapting our biology using these amazing compounds. So some of them are known as extremogens, and that means a compound that comes from extreme places. And these bacteria are known as extremophilic bacteria, which means they love extreme places. But adaptogens don't always come from extreme places. Sometimes they don't. For example, some of the medicinal mushrooms that are used in China, you could think of chaga mushroom. It's been used for thousands of years as a longevity compound. You can buy it as a supplement. And we use it in skincare as well. And the reason that it has a survival strategy is because it's a parasite. So it lives on a tree. The tree does not want it to be on there. The tree is trying to get rid of it. So it has to be incredibly strong to survive. So all of those types of compounds, those mushrooms, have got an enormous amount of active ingredients in them. And the chaga that we use actually has been clinically proven to reduce redness and to also help with things like rosacea. So we use it in some of our soothing compounds. And generally, adaptogens, the word adaptogen means helping the body to become resilient and adapt to stress. So in skincare, that could be environmental stress. So sometimes when someone has sensitive skin and they go into a really cold environment, it makes their skin flare up and be red. Or it could even be the sorts of stress that we have in our daily lives, so emotional stress, because that creates a compound called cortisol in our body. And cortisol is actually a compound that breaks down the skin and the collagen structure. So you don't want to be in a really stressed state for very long. It's not good for your health at all, we know it. But actually for your skin, it also makes you age prematurely. And it also contributes to lots of other inflammatory conditions. Things like rosacea and blemishes can be linked to that as well. So that's why adaptogens can really help us. They can help us with stress, they can help us with environmental stress, and generally try and help us be more resilient.
I'm just trying to think of my daily routine now, Sam. I don't know if you're thinking about that.
I'm thinking about what you're putting on your face every morning. I'm thinking I want that, you know, that microbe that you're talking about, right?
Well, we just launched it in one of our new Evolve products as well, because I love it so much. We were using it in Adaptology already, but it's in our new Age Defying Lifting Serum that we just launched, because I just thought I need to share this with all of our Evolve customers as well.
But we're also young in the studio, Laura, that none of us need anti-aging.
Nobody needs anti-aging. We've stopped talking about anti-aging, and really now we're talking about healthy aging, because it's unrealistic to tell people that they won't age. We just want to help people be confident in their own skin and also age in a healthy way.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I think that's really, 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 that's a positive change, isn't it? I was just going to say, you mentioned something about sensitive skin. Do you have to then really consider your ingredients in a more intentional way when you're creating a range for sensitive skin?
Yes, I think sensitive skin can have lots of different causes. So sometimes it's genetic, sometimes it's to do with the thickness and the strength of the skin barrier layer. So on top of our skin, there's actually a layer which is made up of friendly bacteria and lots of oils that our body actually secretes. And that layer protects us. It stops the water from leaving our skin, and it stops things that shouldn't be in our skin from entering our skin. So having a strong barrier layer on your skin is really important. And some people genetically just have drier skin than others, but we can also damage our barrier layer by washing our face or skin too harshly, or putting certain compounds on which can end up stripping the moisture off our skin. We can help to replenish that layer by putting on a moisturizer, and we can also even use things like prebiotics, which will feed the friendly bacteria that live on our skin and help them to regrow. So when we're thinking about sensitive skin, having a really strong barrier layer is one of a really good strategy. And then we're also thinking about what we don't put in the product to make sure we're not going to make anything worse and to flare the sensitive skin up. Now, you can be sensitive to lots of different things. Some people are even sensitive to common things like glycerin. Like, you know, in food, everyone's different. Mm-hmm. One of the things that can be a common allergen, essential oils. Essential oils come from nature. So, for example, lavender is an essential oil, but some of them contain essential oil allergens. And there are 26 known allergens that are known to cause allergies. And you can actually see them. They need to be written on the ingredients list of any of the products that you use, because they're the things that are most likely to cause allergies. So if you have sensitive skin, one good strategy is to try and check the ingredients list if you know which of those allergens you're allergic to, and make sure it doesn't contain those allergens. And if you aren't sure, you could try and look for a fragrance-free product, or a product that has an allergen-free fragrance.
That's super helpful. Thank you, Laura. I think we've got time for a couple of more questions. Natalia, which ones are you going to pick?
What does the future of cosmetics look like?
It's hard to predict the future, but one trend I'm seeing in the industry is a move towards more personalised cosmetics. So trying to understand what the person needs, or possibly even what their genes say, and then making products that are specific to them. So this requires quite a lot of technology to be able to do it. And it presents a lot of challenges, because when we create cosmetics, we go through a testing process which takes months and months. So if you had to create a new formula for each person, it would need a completely different set of guidelines and testing to be able to do it. But I think that will be the future. You'll be able to go up to a machine and it will analyze your skin, and then out of the bottom will come a cream that's just for you.
You've just blown my mind, Laura.
That's my goodness. Amazing.
Can you imagine?
How far away are we from that?
There are actually cosmetic companies who are already doing that to some extent, but that's not the way we're making our products yet. So we make our products in an artisanal way. We actually have our own factory, which we call a studio, which is just north of London, and our team of artisans craft the products by hand, and we're using organic and natural materials, and our products are certified as well, certified organic, certified vegan, certified cruelty-free. So we're not making things in a very high-tech way, but we are using a lot of really high-tech natural ingredients because we still want our products to work really well.
But I think that's a really interesting point, Laura, because I think also that people are coming back to bespoke artisanal ways of living and local as well, you know, investing in your local community. And so the idea of things being mass-produced, I think people are understanding that some of that has, you know, a waste chain and consequences for our environment that we didn't want, that we're living with because we've inherited that. But I think the way you're creating new products and working with chemistry in an organic way, I think it's quite attractive.
It really is.
You know, and I think it chimes as well with the move towards ethical, more ecological ways of living. So it's really fantastic to hear this happening and to hear how you work with these ingredients. I guess for me, the final question would be what excites you about your work and your research, and how do you think that that will evolve, excuse the pun, in the coming years?
Over the last few years, I've been really focused on making sure that every single person with different skin needs has something in our range to choose from. So we've been launching lots of products for people with sensitive skin, people with dry skin, and making sure that there's always a good choice for every single person. And we're going to continue to do that over the next few years. We already have a plan for what we're going to make next year. In fact, we've already finished what we're going to make and launch next year because we work 12 months in advance. So we've already got the first half of 2024 all finished. So that's my plan for the next few years. And we're going to continue to try and make our supply chain more and more ethical, to understand it better and better, and be able to reduce our carbon footprint as well.
Amazing.
Incredible.
Laura, thank you so much. That was really, really inspiring. And I think it's got us thinking about our daily routine in a totally different way. I'm going to go back and look at all the ingredients at the back of all the creams.
I definitely changed my whole cosmetics.
You're going to change your whole cosmetic range. The shelf that you have, Sam, is going to go.
It's very hard to look at the back and know if something's natural or not, because even if it is a natural ingredient, it will still have a chemical looking name when you look at the ingredients list, which is called an INCI. The best way to ensure that you have a natural and organic product is to get a certified product. Because otherwise it's really easy to get confused about whether something's natural or not. And by natural, we're really saying something that's nearly good enough to eat, ideally.
Natola, do you have any final questions?
I wanted to ask, in moisturizers, when you talked about the oils, about giving that dewy look, sometimes moisturizers are not even penetrated through the skin. They just sit on the top of your skin. Do you think it's a waste, people just buying it to put it on the skin?
So when we have cosmetic products, we're looking at the epidermis. So when you think about the layers of the skin, cosmetics are designed to change the appearance of the skin. They're not a medicine, and they're not meant to penetrate further into the skin than the epidermis. But different ingredients will penetrate into the skin, inside, into the epidermis at different layers. And they're intended to do that. So when you have a treatment product, we often call them a serum. We want those to penetrate into the skin if we're trying to help the appearance of the skin. So, for example, we have a hydrating serum, which has got an ingredient called hyaluronic acid. Hyaluronic acid is actually a natural building block of the skin. It holds up to 1,000 times its weight in water. And we use it in a hydrating product because it will penetrate into the epidermis and it will help to lock moisture into the epidermis, and then it will plump it up and it will give you this dewy, hydrated look that we talked about earlier.
Laura, so I'm just going to ask, what's the epidermis for those of us who are?
So the layers of the skin, so you've got the dermis, which is the deep layers of the skin, and then the epidermis is the sort of the layer above. So this is the layer on the surface of the skin, not the layer where the skin, the new skin cells are growing. It's the layer of the skin as it's going, as the skin cells are maturing, they're getting older and older and getting closer to the surface. So cosmetics only work in the top layers of the skin, and they're all designed to change the appearance of the skin rather than making a medical change to the skin. And we have to be very clear that when we're talking about what our products do, we're not allowed to say, and we shouldn't be trying to make products that are going to be a medicine, because they get tested in a completely different way and you have to have clinical trials and they cost millions of pounds, as we know. Whereas with cosmetics, they're designed to change the appearance of the skin. If you're talking about something like anti-aging, we would say would change the appearance or reduce the appearance of wrinkles. We wouldn't say, you know, remove them, because it wouldn't be true. And if you stopped using the anti-aging product, your skin would go back to the way it was.
Do you have a recommendation for skincare routines for day and night?
Sure. So some people have really complicated skincare routines. For example, some of the Korean brands might even have a 7-step routine that they recommend. But if we're keeping it simple, just to start with, we'd normally start a skincare routine by using a cleanser, particularly in the evening, if we've been in a polluted area or if we've been wearing makeup. In the morning, you may decide you don't need to cleanse your skin. Going in the shower and washing it with water may be enough. In fact, I don't always use a cleanser in the morning. It's important not to dry the skin out too much, after all. So that's one step. The next step would be, if you wanted to use it, you could use a toner. Now, a toner is a water-based product, and it's designed for several different things. It's either designed to change the pH of the skin. Originally, that was the traditional use of it. So after you'd cleansed your skin and it would have a pH a little bit more like soap, so a bit more alkaline, the toner would make it a little bit more acidic, which is what the skin likes. The skin's favourite pH is 5.5, which is just slightly acidic. But actually, toners now can often be other things as well. So they might get used to help hydrate the skin with lots of water before you put other products on top. And sometimes we have a toner that actually helps to exfoliate the skin, so to take the dead layers, the very, very surface layers of the skin off, and that can be done in a toner step. So we have a toner that has something called glycolic acid, which sounds a bit scary, but it's a very, very mild fruit acid. It comes from sugarcane, and that helps the dead skin cells to just gently be shed off the skin, and that makes the skin more radiant, and it helps moisture to be able to be absorbed deeper into the skin. But the toner, I would say not everybody does the toning step, but some people do. The moisturiser is an important step, which the majority of people who use skincare will do. Before we get to moisturiser, though, if you are going to use a treatment product like a serum, it's a good idea to use it before your moisturiser. And the reason is because then it can penetrate really deeply into the epidermis, like we were talking about. And as you said, actually, the moisturiser is designed to sit in the top layers of the skin and protect the skin and stop all of that moisture from leaving the skin. So that's the order that you would use your products. You would use a cleanser, toner if you wanted to use one, a serum, and then a moisturiser. And then in the daytime, you could use either a moisturiser that had a sunscreen in it, or you could use a sunscreen on top if you wanted to use a separate product. So that would be a good basic routine for day and night.
Laura, thank you so much. That was really inspiring, and I think has allowed us to look at our whole daily night routine and look at our cosmetics and our relationship with cosmetics in a different way. I really love the fact that you talked about healthy aging, not anti-aging. So I'm going to take that with me as well. I wonder if you could give us a bit of a breakdown so our listeners take away some of the key messages and the key ideas that we've discussed.
Okay, so cosmetics is an area where you find a lot of chemistry. So we find lots of different types of compounds that get used in cosmetic products. Things like emulsifiers, which help to bind oil and water together. Things like preservatives that stop microbes from growing in products. We also have to think about things like pH to make sure that the skin pH is respected. So that needs to be 5.5. And when we're thinking about where ingredients come from, it's important to understand their supply chain and make sure that we know that the supply chain is ethical and that the ingredients aren't going to harm the environment. It's also important to understand how the skin works. So we talked a little bit about the layers of the skin and the skin barrier layer and how we can help different types of skin be healthy. And we also finished up with a little idea about a good basic routine that you could follow for healthy skin.
Laura, thank you so much. That was a really brilliant breakdown and really summarized, I think.
Yes, yeah. It was certainly. And yeah. I'm fully inspired by the work that you do.
Now it's time for Laura, our guest expert, to stop answering and start asking the questions in
The Expert Test.
Okay, Laura, this is the moment that Sam and I have been absolutely dreading the whole episode. We've got to just do some stretches, Sam. Yep. Let's get ourselves ready. Laura, you have the chance to now check that we've been listening and to ask us maybe 3 or 4 questions. And Natola's going to keep score for us to see how much we have taken in from your fabulous conversation with us.
Okay, question one. What type of compound does the bacteria that comes from the underside of the glacier in Antarctica make?
Is it collagen? No. It's not collagen. It helps the collagen. It's a glyco something. Glycoronic? No.
I know that it comes from stress. I know everything it does. I know it helps collagen.
Should I tell you?
Yes, Laura.
You were so close. It was a glycoprotein.
Glycoprotein.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I got the glyco.
You got the, yeah, maybe.
You can have half a point.
I knew Nutella would be feeling generous. Half a point, girlman. Yeah, okay. Next question, Laura.
Next question. How many times its weight in water does hyaluronic acid hold?
I'm going to say 5. That's a
reason. I'll say 10.
The answer is 1,000.
Oh my goodness, we are so not doing well this week. We are so not doing well.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we were just so absorbed in the conversation.
No, I understood hyaluronic acid.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay.
Can you name 5 different things, different types of things that go into a moisturiser?
Okay. Oh. Right. Mm. Okay. Sam is looking confident. I'm going to say emulsifier.
An oil?
An oil, yeah.
Water?
Yeah.
Now we need like a glycol product to thicken it up.
A thickener. We'll give you that.
And a preservative.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That was a very hard 1 point.
Can you give one example of an ingredient we use to make a pigment?
Usually use like a metal iron?
Zinc.
Yeah, you both got zinc.
Oh, no,
you were right. You were iron oxide and zinc oxide. Yeah, you both won.
Oh, hey. So let's have the final scores then, Natola.
2.5.
1.5.
Oh, yeah.
Just for half.
It's fine margins. It's fine margins, Sam.
It's fine. Half is better than one.
Well, I don't know about you, but I've learned a huge amount this week. And I just wanted to say thank you again to Laura, our guest expert, for opening our eyes to what is possible within cosmetics and for her pioneering and inspiring work with green and organic cosmetics. So, Laura, it's been fabulous to have you in the studio. A huge thank you also to Natola, our engaged and dynamic student in chemistry, and of course to Sam for thinking very wrongly that he could beat me in the expert test, but also for his wonderful company as we co-presented this episode.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you, our listeners, for being with us this week. We hope you enjoyed it and learned as much as we did. Now, make sure you tune in for the next episode of Zwittering On. If you'd like to find out more about our work, you can follow us on our socials or go to our website, saltersinstitute.org.